Well, good luck.
Microphone on. Let me call to order the Police Judicial and Legal Committee meeting for Monday, January 6, 2020. Want to wish everybody a happy new year. Hope everybody got a little bit of time off. I know I did, and I really enjoyed it. Want to thank our council, especially our new council members. I know those first 2 months are, it's a lot of orientation, a lot to take in, and maybe things will settle down just a little bit for everybody. Our agenda is before you. The first item on that is approval of minutes from the December 2nd, 2019.
So moved.
We have a motion.
Second.
Is there a second? Any discussion? All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Item number two is public comments. If you have a public comment to make, please come to the lectern. We have a timer. You'll have 2 minutes. Hello, Sally. Happy New Year.
Hello.
Thank you for wearing a little holiday color. Everybody else has gone drab already.
My name is Sarah, otherwise known as Sally Jacob. I live at 1152 Village Creek Lane. This is to compliment the police department and the Charleston County EMS. My housemate of the years that I've lived here had a massive heart attack on December 20th and died at home within an hour. And the police were there, the EMS were there, and I couldn't have made it through without them. Thank you.
We're so sorry to hear that, Sally. But thank you to our first responders. And we hear that a lot about how great y'all are. So, Sally, if there's anything any of us can do, please let us know. You're part of our family. Anyone else? Come on.
Hi, how you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Debbie McLawhorn, a citizen with Mount Pleasant and retired law enforcement for Mount Pleasant Police. But I'm here on the for 5B, which is the tethering of the animals. And I am the founder of Southern Paws Animal Rescue. And Mayor, I have a dog for you still, Willow.
No, you do.
Just throwing that out there. No, I have a lot, okay. But I hope that council takes this very seriously. As you're aware, a lot of you, the incident that happened during the hurricane, Xena the Warrior Princess, she was chained during the hurricane and we were able to rescue her. And he's been fined for it. However, I know that's Charleston County, but look how close it was to Mount Pleasant. It's right there by Rivertown and Dunes West. So please consider it. Xena's a prime example because of the weather and the conditions that she stayed under with the chain for so long. She'll never be adoptable. Her lungs are ruined. But she'll be loved forever. She's in my rescue. Okay, so, and Kelsey, with Kelsey Futerwall. She's actually the one that was supposed to speak today, but she's running a few minutes late, but she will be sliding in here in a few minutes if she's allowed to speak at all. But she'll also be there at town council meeting tomorrow. So I ask you, please consider this. Yes, next week. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Debbie. Thank you for what you do. Any other comments during public comments? All right, there being none, we will close item number two, move on to item number three, Police Matters Years of Service Recognition. Chief. Speaking of dog adopters, how's your new dog doing?
She's doing well.
Good.
She's fit right in. But Mayor, before I start my recognitions, I have something I'd like to do with your permission. It's already been a tough year for law enforcement in the state of South Carolina. Lost our first police officer in the state yesterday morning. So Officer Jackson Winkler with the Florence Regional Airport, young man, traffic stop, don't know have all the details yet, was shot and killed in the performance of his duties. Suspects in custody, again, don't know all the details. We have a tough job. I appreciate comments like you gave us, and I appreciate the support we have. I swore in two young men this morning, two brand new officers. I reminded them and their families that were at our swearing in that we're not guaranteed going home at the end of our shifts, but we come out every single day to make sure our citizens are safe. And, sir, and with the committee's permission, I'd like to take a moment of silence.
Absolutely.
In honor of Officer Jackson Winkler. If we can do that, sir, I appreciate it. Thank you all. Appreciate that. Just keep him and his family and his agency in our thoughts and prayers. Moving on, kind of hard to follow that. I do have two fantastic police officers I want to recognize. First one is going to be Officer Bill Martin. Bill, would you please come forward? I have the honor of recognizing Bill for 5 years of service. You can tell Bill's a little older, so this isn't his first career. but we love having him. Well, recognizing today Officer Bill Martin for 5 years with our department. He began January 2015. As with all of our officers, started in patrol unit, and he's currently with our accreditation office. Bill's hard work while serving as an officer on patrol earned him his current position as accreditation officer. Our agency is measured on over 400 different standards, and it is Officer Martin's responsibility to monitor and collect the data to ensure our compliance. While serving in the position, Officer Martin was instrumental in our agency's earning its ninth national accreditation, reaccreditation, and achieving gold standard with excellence. Officer Martin also assists with the managing of our social media page, keeping our citizens informed. So if you're on a page, you see the information that comes out, Bill has a big part of that. In a holiday video that we just put out, Bill was instrumental along with Inspector Rozier getting that out for us. I know I joked about his age, but he has accomplished so much in his 5 years with Mount Pleasant that I can only imagine what his next 5 years will be like. So, but congratulations, and I appreciate it. Didn't have it with me. Sorry about that. My next one is Sergeant Adam Willis. You'll come up, Sarge. And yes, we do have envelopes. I'm not sure where they are, so I apologize for that. But the important thing is their checks were deposited, I think. So they have their money. I've got the honor of recognizing Sergeant Adam Willis for 15 years. He started with this department January 2005. As with all the Mount Pleasant police officers, just like with Bill, he started out as a patrol officer serving our community in a professional and exceptional manner. He had a passion for investigations and earned possession in the position in the Detective Bureau where he skillfully investigated crimes against our citizens. His investigations would almost always lead to the arrest of the suspect, recovering stolen property, and getting justice for our victims. Sergeant Willis rose to the rank of corporal, where he honed his skills as a supervisor and testing for the rank of sergeant whenever an opening came available. His hard work and dedication did earn him that promotion to his current rank of sergeant. Sergeant Willis is currently our training bureau, responsible for the training of our new officers, preparing them for the police academy, and also ensuring that our veteran officers maintain our qualifications and certifications. I know there's been many, many great things that Sergeant Willis has done in his 15 years, but one that sticks out to me, and I don't remember how many years it's been, but the video of him running to a burning car and pulling a person out of a burning car, saving their life. Again, that just really sticks out, and that video was amazing. And I know that you've done many, many other great things, and you'll do many more great things. And I look for Sergeant Willis continuing to rise through the ranks here and be in our command staff one day. So congratulations for your 15 years.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you, sir.
And Mayor Committee, thank you. That's all I have.
That's it? All right. Thank you very much. Item number four is judicial matters. There are no agenda items there. Everything running. Must be court day down there. Lobby was full. You can always tell. Item number five is legal matters. 5A is discussion of ordinance on reporting lost or stolen guns. So who's going to take this for us and run with it?
Mr. Mayor, I believe this item was asked to be considered by Ms. Whitley.
Yes, so the reason that I brought this forth is I received some statistics from the police department about lost and stolen guns actually coming from unsecured vehicles. And the information was very interesting, but what I also realized was that these are just the people who are voluntarily reporting that they've lost or that they've lost their weapon or that they've had their weapon stolen. And we also have some statistics on where these weapons have now gone and on to be used potentially in crime. And I think that data is really important to a police department's work, and having more information is better than having less information. And so by having an ordinance that would, it's not about regulating ownership or regulating transfer of ownership. It's simply, if you lose your gun or your gun is stolen, just let the police department know so that if that gun pops up later, they kind of can help with their investigations and see where the, crime syndicates are funneling guns to Greenville or North Charleston or used here in Mount Pleasant. So there's a city in, I think it was in Virginia, that just passed a similar ordinance, and I heard about that ordinance, and I thought that would be an interesting thing for the town of Mount Pleasant to consider. That's it.
Let's ask our law enforcement. Can somebody speak?
I would ask the legal person.
Okay.
The legal part of it, if you don't want to trade it.
Good morning.
Morning.
Ms. Whitley, I think you referenced South Carolina code, which is essentially preempted state law, essentially saying municipalities cannot pass certain legislation related to guns. And as you indicated, that includes the transfer, ownership, possession, carrying, and or transportation of firearms, ammunition, or components, or anything of the sort. So what I understand you're asking is more of a regulatory reporting requirement. Is that what you had in mind?
Mm-hmm.
And is that considered a criminal?
It would just be a civil, just a civil penalty, not a criminal, or not creating any sort
right.
of crime from
right.
this. I think the Richmond ordinance was just a civil, like a fine if you didn't report, your weapon.
Okay. So it would, in that case, I think the preemption laws and very little case law on this. Of course, we've had some AG weigh in. Columbia, South Carolina, for example, has taken a fairly aggressive approach when it comes to gun laws and has been repeatedly warned, don't do this. Of course, they continue to do that. This, I don't believe, rises to the level of control of that. But I think with everything in this field, it is a question as to if and when the courts would address it. So it is a little premature to say it depends what draft would come out with. It depends on the requirements. But if there is a criminal penalty, which is fine or anything of the sort, we would expect significant scrutiny from our courts, potentially from any advocates on this.
Mayor, may I ask a question?
Sure.
Would it be possible to get to ask the Attorney General to weigh in on this and get a letter of whether or not this is something that we'd be permitted to do?
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. That would be an appropriate way to move forward with this.
Okay.
Of course, I think first, we should draft out this committee, I'm not sure, something like that would go to council, but I would advocate that we have some language in place. And if you'd like to work with us, we can get that language in place, prepare it for council, and at least so council knows what the language is, what they're voting on before they decide to take that step.
Let me ask, what are our statistics? In the words of former Councilman Bob Rimmer, what problem are we trying to solve? How many gun thefts
yes, sir.
Do we
just,
think?
For 2019, I have the updated stats from our crime analyst. We had 50 guns that were stolen during the year. Of those 50, 37 were stolen from unsecured vehicles. So the biggest issue we were having was the unsecured vehicles. Yes, they shouldn't leave their guns in their cars, whether they're locked or not locked. I would prefer them not to. But with 37 vehicles that were unlocked, guns were stolen. So that's our statistics for the guns. And I will tell you that one was found using the commission of a crime. That was actually a botched arm robbery in Charlotte. And one was found adjacent to a homicide in North Charleston. Now, don't know whether that gun was used for the homicide. It was just found in that general area. And Mayor and Committee, I would also share this, a concern, not just with farms. What concerns me, especially with the opioid epidemic, is what will we do to address leaving prescription drugs unsecured in your car or other items unsecured in your vehicle that can cause harm just as a gun could if they were not secured properly. So I just offer that.
Yes.
And do you think it would be, I mean, and this is the people who voluntarily reported this. So do you think that, I mean, if there was an ordinance that was known, that we would get more data and that would, and then also by raising awareness of this issue, that it would encourage people to secure their vehicles?
Ma'am, we've done so much awareness work. The officers introduced you today with their social media, getting out of community events. We have preached that, not just with guns, but all items. I think Mount Pleasant residents are very good at reporting their stolen items. What we're not good at is securing our vehicles. I believe they're being reported. Could there be something not reported? Of course there could be. But I believe we are, because they want to. Their insurance obviously covers something stolen. Any guns that, majority of guns, I imagine, Mount Pleasant's residents own, were purchased legally, and they want to make sure that they are reported. So, again, I don't have that data to know how many go unreported. They'd have to tell us they didn't report the gun. So I'll secure that.
Well, I mean, I would like, I don't think there needs to be a motion necessarily, but I would be interested in having a draft ordinance kind of put together so that we could take a look at it as a committee and make sure that it doesn't violate any sort of state preemption. But I think that providing more data to the police department for your investigations and encouraging our citizens via ordinance to report, I think is not a bad thing. And I think that more data is better than less data. That's my thoughts on this. I don't know what the rest of the committee feels like.
I'll yield to committee members first. If anybody has anything they want to say. I'm looking at you, Jake.
I mean, I'm not sure.
I'm
taking it in.
Yeah. How about this? And I agree, I don't think we're at the point of a motion. If there's a ordinance that you would like to consider, maybe bring it back to this committee next month, and let's take a look at that. And keep in mind, like, I hadn't thought about, you know, the comparison with opioids and prescriptions and other things
that.
Like that. And, you know, maybe it's more of a, it's not so targeted at guns as it is anything that's harmful. You're responsible for it if you have not locked it up in your car. Because I think what I hear from the chief is there's been a lot of effort to get people to lock their cars.
There has been, sir.
And so if there's a way that we can facilitate that, we might solve more than one problem, right?
Yes, sir.
So maybe our ordinance, and this is what we can discuss in the meantime, can we do anything to help with an ordinance that might, you know, make people take a little more seriously secure in their car? And we can talk with you all about that in the totality of what
right.
we're talking about.
That
Does that
great.
Sound all right to everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Thank you, Chief. Appreciate it. Mr. Pagliarini, appreciate it.
Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry. So is the ordinance going to be just about the draft ordinance going to be just about guns, or have we now? I just worry about punishing victims for crimes.
Right.
Like if somebody broke into my car, they stole something.
We're talking
now
about
all of a sudden,
secure cars.
Like cars unlocked. You left your car unlocked.
Left unlocked.
I mean, I definitely try to secure my car, but I mean, there might be times where it's unlocked and I don't want to be punished for leaving my car unlocked. I mean, you're punishing the victim.
well, it wouldn't be, because if you just report it, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's an encouragement for people to report that these things have been stolen.
Yeah. I understand that part as far as the guns, but when you open it up to prescription drugs or all this other stuff, I mean,
Well, that's why I think we need to have the conversation.
Have
I'm just wary
yeah.
of, I'm just wary of punishing the victim of a crime.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And that's a good point. All right, so we will move on to item B, discussion and possible action regarding the humane confinement of dogs. Yes, and you're here. Let's see what point we're at. Are we at the point where it would serve us better just to ask her questions, or do we need for her to tell us what we need to know? I mean, where do we think we are on this? I'm just trying to streamline the process.
I think giving her the opportunity to speak, because she's the one who
sure.
gave us the draft ordinances to look at. So.
Okay. That'd be good.
May I approach with hand out?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll pass it down.
And just in case you didn't already know, you're talking to a bunch of dog lovers up here, so this is your family.
And I'm in good company. My name is Kelsey Gilmore Futerall. I'm the South Carolina State Director for the Humane Society of the United States, but I also happen to live in Snee Farm, so I'm a town resident, so this issue is personal as well as professional to me. I believe Councilwoman Whitley has provided some information that I gave to her, both with draft ordinance language as well as some reasoning and rationale behind it. I will tell you that in the pre-file session for the state legislature, we've seen both a humane tethering bill pre-filed as well as I think what intends to be a Good Samaritan bill for getting animals out of cars. In my opinion, it doesn't go far enough to protect the owner of the car. So we're going to be working with that lawmaker on improving the language there and making it safer both for the folks responding to those animals in need and the people who own the cars and the animals. I had a minor panic attack when I went into my gym and I thought, oh my gosh, this guy is leaving his German Shepherd in the car, and the car would turn on every 5 minutes or so on its own. So trying to create a law that keeps up with technology and is responsive to how the cars are changing, I think, is really important in building in those safe measures and those safety spaces for the owners of the cars as well. So the reason I brought both of these before you is that currently there is nothing in South Carolina, nothing in the town of Mount Pleasant, that insulates first responders or your average citizen from rescuing an animal out of a car. Now, law enforcement can act on that, and they can go ahead and break that car window and do what they need to do, but they might be civilly responsible for the damage done to the car. The language that I've put forth to you would ideally insulate those good actors from a civil response from the car owner if they were to say, well, you know, it cost me $800 to fix my window, I'm going to sue the town of Mount Pleasant. And if you follow the protocol that I've listed out in the draft ordinance for Good Samaritans, the sheet that I handed out is only on the humane restraint of animals. So unfortunately, it doesn't address the Good Samaritan law. Then both the Good Samaritans and the first responders are going to be protected from liability there, which would hopefully empower them to do more within their capacity to respond to those calls. The humane restraint ordinance is really addressing inhumane restraint. By no means is it a ban on using a tether to restrain your dog. My folks do it back in South Dakota. I've tethered animals before. It's not inherently inhumane. The code that I've given you as a draft addresses most of those nuisance complaints that you might get between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. So I have put a restriction from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. on unattended tethering, meaning somebody's not within the sight and sound of the dog for 15 minutes or more. That doesn't waste officer time. We see those two-hour restraints where somebody says you can't tether a dog for more than 2 hours, largely being unenforceable because we don't have the opportunity or the manpower to let a law enforcement officer sit outside a house for 2 hours. So we've looked at doing a couple different things, and we've seen different things be more effective from the Humane Society perspective. This overnight ban tends to address a lot of the nuisance calls that officers are getting, but also encourages people to bring their dogs inside, start to socialize them as those members of the family to reduce those really aggravated bites that we tend to see from unsocialized dogs, and kind of solve two problems with one solution. So I'm happy to answer any questions. And I apologize for speaking quickly.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
Chief Ritchie? Have you been able to review this draft ordinance, and do you have any feedback on it?
I have not been able to review this one.
Okay. I just, the enforceability, I know you talked about, you just touched on that a little bit, but that's always my question with these types of things is.
I can tell you, I certainly support anything that would protect our animals, and if you get an opportunity, you may already have, we have our town ordinance says 90.20 talks about the animal care and mistreatment. It covers probably just about everything except for the tethering part in there, because it talks about the extreme weather, the cold, the responsibilities of a dog owner or pet owner, mm-hmm. To be sure they're cared for properly. So obviously I'm not opposed to it. I mean, obviously I would encourage it if it does the will of this committee and council to take that extra measure to protect our animals.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I would like to move that we send this to full council for...
Second.
What would, we have a motion, we have a second, we're in discussion. What would our chance be to coordinate with your office, because you all would be the ones, you know, that the burden of this falls on, to make sure that if we have an ordinance that we're doing, that we are not giving you an order that you can't fulfill?
I think, well, obviously, we work with our legal team, sir, and but, you know, I defer back to Ms. Pagliarini, but I believe it's be just an amendment to our current ordinance, would it not be, or would it be a whole different?
We'd have to look at the ordinance, certainly work. It might be a complete replacement of our ordinance or an amendment of it. Our board, as the chief said, our ordinance is fairly broad. It doesn't specifically use the word tethering, and I think there are some specifics in this proposed ordinance that would probably enhance our ordinance that would be beneficial. The Good Samaritan is another piece to it, I think, that would significantly alter our ordinance, so we need to take a look at that. So what I'd ask is if the committee wants to move to council, if you'd like a completed ordinance by that time, we can get on that right away. If the council just wants to consider it and send it back, that'd be another story. Moving on this right away, I think we have the language.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with moving forward with this. This has been on committee for multiple months and kind of bounced around. So I think we've had the draft language from 5 or 6 months now, and so I think that I feel comfortable moving forward.
Do we know at this point whether we'll be replacing the ordinance or just enhancing the one that we already have? Because wouldn't it be easier to enhance what we already have?
If I may, the draft that I've submitted, and I'm sorry if it didn't make it to you, and I can make myself available today to talk about it, just inserts about three or four paragraphs. A couple definitions of improving the definition of shelter, defining what is extreme weather, and then putting forth those two provisions on the tethering and the Good Samaritan. So I did draft it as redline inserts, and I'm happy to sit down and meet. I will say that Dorchester County was the most recent organization to go ahead and pass this. So now there are 35 towns or counties in the state that it specifically addressed the inhumane restraint of dogs. So we would be moving on trend to continue to move forward with this.
Yeah, I think from what I gather, everybody's on board. I think the question is only, is it a new ordinance or just beefing up the one we already have? Yes, sir, Mr.
One question about who decides penalties? Where does that, is that in the language of ordinance or is that? So the penalties for, like, if we add the tethering are the same as?
Yes, it's all the same as what would be.
Where do I find those?
It's in 90.20. It's under animal care and mistreatment.
Okay, it's in there. Okay.
Ordinances. And Mayor, to your question about enforcement, we do have two full-time animal control officers. This would be their primary job. They already handle calls of mistreatment or neglect, and they respond to it, and it rises to another level. We have a police officer get involved.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is there specifics on when you speak about dogs being locked in cars, or like temperature, outdoor temperature? You know, of course, it's safer if it's winter and, you know, 40 degrees outside than if you do it in July. So,
right.
Are there going to be specifics on that?
No. And the reason we did that is we assume it's in the officer's best discretion as to whether those animals are in risk or at risk of immediate harm. So we know that in Charleston, a 75 degree sunny day is different than maybe a 75 degree cloudy day.
Right,
so
in the evening versus day.
Exactly.
And then that goes with the Good Samaritan rule, you know, if we're going to protect people that might do this.
Exactly. So
specifics on what conditions are?
No, and it relies on a good faith. So I've got the draft language pulled up in front of me, and I apologize for not bringing copies of it. If the person has a good faith belief that the confined animal is in immediate danger of suffering physical injury or death unless the animal is removed from the motor vehicle. So that's kind of the threshold for acting from there.
Okay, because I've seen people go be hysterical at a movie theater in March at 8 p.m. when somebody went in, I don't know, to pick up their child or whatever. They were all screeching in the parking lot wanting to bust the window because the dog was in the car. And I'm like, it's 60 degrees and it's dark. The dog, you know.
Right.
So then that, you know, for them, they were ready to break the car window to get the dog out.
Sure.
So
and I can tell you based on a meeting I had earlier in the month in the city of Belton up in Anderson County, they found it preferable based on their constituent base to only include the protections for first responders. They didn't really want to allow the Good Samaritans that that ability to act on that. They didn't want to empower their average citizens to kind of do things that maybe were not going to be appropriate. So I think that that's something that, based on the language of the statute or the ordinance, what I put together is what we being HSUS, has used in other municipalities, and we found it to be effective. But if we've got enough police force in Mount Pleasant that we think that within 3 to 5 minutes of somebody calling an animal's serious and imminent harm, then, you know, that's...
100 degrees outside.
Chief?
Yeah. We get there faster. I'm telling you, our officers and animal control officers, we get these calls, we respond immediately. And the way our officers are assigned to districts, their response times are very quick. And I can tell you, we've been to many of these calls, we assess them right away. And we're protected, too, by exigent circumstances. If we get there, the dog's in trouble, we feel like it is, so we either have the lockout tools, we can open a car, or we'll break a window, quite frankly. And then we'll rely on our legal team to take care of from there. But normally, we'll do our best to run the tag. We find the owner of the animal, have them come out and deal with it. But we're there fairly quick. We don't leave them sitting around.
Just based on what I've heard, it sounds like to me I could support going with the protection for our first responders first. We live in an area where a lot of people aren't used to our climate now. They're new residents. And like I said, they may panic on a day in March. I leave my dog in the car on certain occasions, but I'm well aware of what the inside temperature is in my car. I think an easy, and this is just my opinion right now, is to protect first responders, because I trust our police officers to get there quickly and handle it right. I'm not sure I trust everybody, want to deputize everybody in the public to break a window when they're worried about a dog. Mm-hmm. I mean, my dog might be asleep and the person think the dog's unconscious, you know, and they will find out quickly that Rusty was not asleep.
And the language for the Good Samaritan protection does require that person to contact law enforcement or 911 prior to entering the vehicle. So there are additional requirements that the average citizen must complete in order to be protected by this law civilly that a first responder doesn't have to do. So it does, you know, I would suggest that maybe you read through those, or I'm happy to read them aloud for you, but just to fully consider, you know, I suggested to a woman when I was leaving the bank that she go in and ask the bank to bring her dog in, and they said, of course, bring him in. So just encouraging those new people who don't live here and don't know how hot it can get on a 70-degree day, that's what we're balancing, and I understand that it is a balance.
So what is it that, that from the motion in the second, what is it that we're sending to council, drafts of changes to our current ordinance?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll be sending enhancements to our current ordinance. Mm-hmm. All right. So legal will have those in the packet that goes out to council for next Tuesday's meeting. Okay. All right. So we have a motion, a second, and discussion. Are we ready to vote? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. So we'll proceed. And thank you.
Thank you, sir.
5C, approval to create a flood resilience committee of the town. I think council has already authorized this. Everybody's heard me say ad nauseum the reasons why. And it primarily came from my attending the final presentation of the Dutch Dialogues at the City of Charleston. I think a question that I would ask of council is this just like any other standing committee, or there are certain committees that for some reason the mayor always chairs, and that's transportation and this one. I'm not sure where that came from. We have our institutional knowledge in the room. Council had to vote and say this committee, these committees will always be chaired by the mayor?
That's correct. The ordinance that we have are standing committees. And so in order to create a standing committee, we need to create, by ordinance, this committee. the number of members, and if there is a specific requirement as to the chair, then that would need to be in there as well.
Okay. If there is no specific requirement, can the mayor chair it? Okay. I mean, I'll leave it up to council. I've got a lot to do, and I don't mind doing it. This is as important as transportation. It's infrastructure, and it's dealing with other governmental bodies. I'm happy to chair it. But far be it from me to say, I want y'all to make the mayor chair it. So y'all decide what you want to do.
Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
So the question before us is not to create the Flood Resilience Committee, because I feel like we voted on this
already,
a few times already.
Need an ordinance.
I was confused as to why it was on the agenda.
We need an ordinance.
We need an ordinance. So what, at least from a legal perspective, this committee had asked is, if it is to be a standing committee, that's the first question, in which case we would need an ordinance with two readings. The number of members of the committee, whether it be three or four, typically, and then if there is, as the mayor suggested, if there is a specific requirement that the mayor chairs it, then that would need to be in the ordinance as well.
Right.
Okay.
And it was intended to be a standing committee because they're going to be looking at coastal cities having a standing committee of council that addresses flooding.
And I apologize. I was just confused because I thought we voted on this last month and then voted on it at a council meeting, and now we're doing it again.
Right.
If the question is not creating the committee itself, but how it's formed, I feel like it should be listed on the agenda that way, by the way. I'm not aware of any of this discussion until now.
Sure.
So do we need to make that decision right now?
I think we need to say the Flood Resilience Committee would be a standing committee, have four members, which we need, just like this
standing,
one.
Okay. I'd put that in the form of a motion.
And then you need to have discussion of whether you want the mayor to always chair that or not.
I feel like it should. Oh, sorry.
You have the floor. Thank you for asking.
I make a motion that it be a standing committee with four committee members, and the mayor chooses the committee members. He may or may not make himself or herself the chair.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Before we vote, do we have enough, Mr. Pagliarini, to form the ordinance? That's all we need. Okay. Any others? Yes, ma'am.
This is maybe just semantics, but I think originally I feel like this was a flood and resilience committee, not just a flood resilience.
It's just flood.
It's just for flooding. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
All right,
but
so
just for
flood. So it's not for resilience overall, it's flood.
Just flood.
Flooding,
right.
Okay.
And certainly we want as much guidance as now, and Mr. Redler, you're correct, it went to committee, or went to council last month. I only assumed just to see whether that was something the council was interested in.
Oh, okay, thank you.
But remember, we'll prepare this for first reading on Tuesday, and if there are any changes along the way, amendments can be made at final reading, so you'll have that opportunity as well.
Getting used to how long government takes.
Yeah, it does. And one of the things we're trying to do, we're trying to learn lessons from the past and make sure that council is in agreement about ordinances and new things like this before we go down to having new ordinances written. And
gotcha.
Then everybody says, oh, that's not really what we want. So, all right, so we have a motion. We have a second. Any other discussion? Mm-hmm. All in favor of the motion as stated, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes. Thank you. We'll look forward for that Tuesday. Next is D, is a discussion of public access to council meeting agenda, supporting documents and presentations. I'll be the first to say it's not that there is a problem here. We are just always looking, and as our population has grown and gotten more engaged, we're always looking at, are we giving the public all the information they can have about what we're considering and what will be at our council meetings and what we might be taking action on. So Christine, our clerk, does that very well, and I guess you're going to start by showing us what we do give now, and then we can discuss maybe, you know, if there's anything we can do to enhance it. Thank you.
There we go. Currently, we have a lot of information attached to our agendas.
They're posted no later than Friday afternoon, the Tuesday, or the Friday before the Tuesday council meeting. The agendas are accessed through the town's website, through the homepage, and the agendas and minutes link. The links that are included on the agenda are as follows: minutes from the previous meeting, that would be the council meeting. We have copies of all ordinances and resolutions up for consideration for both first and final reading. We have planning commission and planning committee links from the most recent meetings, and through those minutes you can access additional information for annexation petitions, zonings, text amendments, staff reports, and presentations. Committee action items, when information on the action item is available, is also linked to the agenda, and any presentations that we receive in advance are linked as well. And up in the upper left-hand corner, we have, as you can see here, in the upper left-hand corner, there's a toolbox, and in that we have the links to the Code of Ordinance, as well as the comprehensive plan, projects and applications maps, the use table, and the zoning map. And as you can see where the arrows are, see item V, it says November 17th, 2019. That would be a link to the council minutes. And then there are a couple of other ones there as well. But, and then on the other side of the page, you can see where it's in blue and underlined, where you can click on that, and there's links to the ordinances. So the, under item 8, you can see under planning, we have links to the planning committee minutes, the most recent ones, as well as the planning commission minutes as well. And from there, you can access, as you can see on the other side of the page, planning commission minutes, and there's links to the applications and everything there. So just wanted to give you an update on what we're currently doing, see if you have any questions.
The question I have is not so much what you put out as the clerk, but especially when it comes to planning items, is there any way to put in more layman's terms? And Christiane, you've probably dealt with more of these than anybody in this room of all these things. Is there a way, like, you know, we had one last month, remember, where somebody wanted us to change the zoning to commercial. And the information we got as council was great. This was a house, it's in a residential zoning, but it's being used, you know, commercially or whatever. Is there a way to put, this property is currently known as Joe's Garage, or, you know, this is a wooden house on the corner of such and such a street? Because it takes some digging to figure out, you know, what we're talking about. Like, if is this from a real agenda up there, that first one? Mm-hmm. You know, a 0.54 tract of land located at 3709 River Station Court and depicted as Lot 50. Well, that great if you're a real estate lawyer, but, you know, is it a house? Is it a business? Is it vacant land? And I know that's probably a lot of work. But can we just at some point put more out there so people know, you know, what we're talking about? I don't know if I'm asking Eric or Christiane, who's technically not on duty for this meeting, but, you know, can the planning staff just put a little, you know, it can be one or two sentences in layman's terms what this is?
Certainly. We can do the best we can. I think, you know, Mayor, from your time in office, we've just kept improving and improving and improving the information that we
sure
provide to the point where I think it's important to mention there isn't any community anywhere I've ever seen working in three different states
right. That
provides the amount of information at the fingertips of a citizen like Mount Pleasant.
I agree.
But that doesn't mean we can't always find a way to try to improve. We have received criticism as to the description of items under planning in the past. We've worked to include more information to the point why each one is almost a paragraph to read.
Right.
But in any one of those items where we think that we can more clearly describe a location, Home Depot, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
We can add that. The trouble is that I think it's tough for a staff person to know even themselves who's writing the description that might be Home Depot.
Right.
But we can try to do better in that regard. So we will.
You know, and I'm thinking, for instance, you could have a property with a street address that could be Mill Street or the end of Church Street or something, and not realize, wait a minute, this is, this fronts on Shem Creek, you know, this is waterfront property or something like that, just something that, that tips off that it's more than, you know, a 0.54 acre on River Station Court. And I don't know what we're allowed by law to say, you know, the applicant intends. I don't know if we're allowed to do that.
We can. Mayor, as you're aware, as Eric suggested, we went through a good bit of revisions in the last 2 years.
Yes.
On how to streamline. There was a whole bunch of information, and our ordinances were very long. And the general complaint at that time was that there was so much information, people couldn't sort through what was what. So we've really worked with legal and planning to simplify what's in front. But I do think, as Mr. DeMora said, putting a short paragraph in there to give some general, again, the issue is always going to be, we don't necessarily know what means what to certain people. Mm-hmm. And that we're getting into a predictive, well, what does this mean?
Right.
And Mayor, you and I have discussed about what a zoning change means. Well, when you change from AB to AB2, for example, there's a laundry list of different things that takes pages in some cases to fully describe. So I'm not sure that we're ever going to satisfy everybody, but we can certainly make an
right.
attempt to
And I have no intention of seeing on there if this rezoning is approved, these are the possible, we'd be rewriting the code basically, and we can't do that.
And I would say that's the general, I mean, if there is very few complaints, but if there is a complaint, that's what it is. We don't know, as a citizen saying, we don't know what this means, and that is fairly difficult to convey in some circumstances.
Okay. Council? Yeah, Mr. Rambo first, and then Ms. Whit.
In my opinion, I think, this agenda item arose out of you know, public comment from the last council meeting. But even before I was on council, I would say the most helpful thing is the particularly planning is the presentation. I mean, that PowerPoint presentation. Even during council meetings, where I mean, we're as council, we don't even have a printout of the presentation, and the slides are scrolling through, and I'm like, wait a second, go back two slides or whatever, and even just the opportunity, and it, to me, it wouldn't even have to be on the agenda itself, but like a folder in that link that, you know, because I know some of those presentations are being worked on up to the last minute. So even if it's not attached to the agenda, there could be like a folder online that we throw all the PowerPoint presentations from that meeting onto, so that way the public can see those presentations. Because I know even for me, those presentations are way more helpful than like the attached ordinances to legally mumbo jumbo, you know. And not a criticism of anything anybody's doing, just, you know, I don't think it would be too much to just throw those into a folder. Ms. Barrett,
as Ms. Barrett was pointing out, we might not have the town council presentation prepared until Monday morning. But all the previous presentations for both Planning Commission and Planning Committee are available. And so you can see that in the over on the, what are you looking at, the right-hand side of your screen, PowerPoint presentation. So when Planning prepares those for Planning Commission and Planning Committee, it's the exact same slides that are going to be presented to you at the Town Council meeting that evening. So they're already there, available once that agenda is posted Friday afternoons.
I think what happened, Ms. Farrell's correct, one particular individual that speaks up at council about it doesn't want to have to take the step from that item to the minutes to research. The argument is that that is burdensome to the citizen, and that may or may not be. I don't know. But it's at some point it is, you know, I mean, how much more
right.
are we going to be able to provide on that? The information is there. But to your point, Mr. Mayor, we will look at ways to try to clarify even better some of those items you see under new business and old business with the example in front of you.
All right. Ms. Hyatt?
So the actual presentations
there's not really a link to that exactly.
They're there.
Because they're working on them up to the minute sometimes, right? Or once they're done, can they be?
For council. The presentation for council, which we sort of repackage a little, same information, same visuals.
That's what I think the citizens want to see. They want to see what we're going to be presented so they know what to comment.
We can't provide that.
Yeah,
That's right.
Yeah, that's what they would like to see.
But the main items are already there.
Right.
You just have to click on the link and look up that item.
Well, does it?
I know we've kind of streamlined the way we public comment, and they have to speak at the beginning and they get 2 minutes.
Would that help the issue if they could speak after the presentation? Like, people can speak one time on their items and get their 2 minutes, and then can there be other after the presentation that they could speak? It wouldn't take us more time in the meeting. Is there a way for that to happen?
That's a separate discussion.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Is that it's something else?
We can discuss that.
I mean, if that would help as far as
one of the things,
letting them speak after they see the presentation.
That would help with this is the it would take away some of the false alarms, because I know as soon as our agenda goes out, sometimes my phone starts ringing off the hook over the weekend. Oh my gosh, what are they trying to do? Put a cell tower? And I'm not talking about the Moultrie School thing, but this or that. No, this is a house. This is a residential thing or something like that. So like a one or two word thing to offset it might be helpful, and it might save us all some time. That's a different, topic than public comments. But Ms. Whitley, you've been patient. Thank you.
I want to echo your concern about having just sort of a one name, and I think sometimes it's so easy. So, for example, there was a list of cases, and it was all these case numbers, three case numbers, and you had to click the link and like scroll through and find who it was. But if you just put Earl's Court Property, and then the names of the three cases. And so I was getting calls, you know, right up to the meeting of the thing. Wait a minute, that's what these cases are? We didn't know that's what that was. And so, again, it's like I think it is sort of path of least resistance, where people are going to skim through the agenda and look for those key words. You know, nobody reads the whole document. They read the executive summary. So I think that having that one there word there, too. I think also including the YouTube video link in the minute at the very beginning, because we streamlined our minutes to where the discussion is basically eliminated and all we're including in the minutes is the vote and kind of the overarching things. I think sometimes for people to be able to have that quick link to the old council meeting where they can kind of scroll through and find the council discussion on portions of that, I think that could be something that's useful to folks if they want to understand, you know, what happened at that meeting. And I don't know if including the previous month's one or the current month's one, so when people go back to that agenda, they can find it easily. I think that after the meeting is concluded, that PowerPoint that Laura and Jake were talking about, having that added in after the meeting's concluded so that when people go back, they can see exactly what was presented to council on a going forward basis, because then it's over. We already know it's there, and then just like have like a little addendum to the agenda of like, here's the YouTube video, here's the thing. So if you miss the meeting or if you want to go back and understand, you can watch the video, you can look at the PowerPoint. Then the other question I had, and I don't know if this is something that council can do or is possible, but is there a way, if council agrees to put everything on the agenda prior to a certain date, that we could finalize the agenda sooner and have them out sooner than Friday afternoon before? Because this is where I think, especially for committee day, it gets problematic, because you've got professionals who know that they've got to come on Monday, January 6th, but they have no clue what time of day to come until Friday afternoon. I think it's really hard for people, and they sort of jump through the hoops for us to kind of come be here, but giving people just even a couple days more notice so that the people coming to present to us know a little bit sooner. And I don't know if that's if council could agree to submit everything prior to X date, that would give staff enough time to finalize a day or two earlier.
Yes. Right now it's sort of prescribed. About Thursday afternoon is a certain cutoff for things. It might even be in our ordinances. We could always back those things up. That would be up to council, whether that gives council enough time.
That's a discussion we can have. I've often wondered about that as well. We can have it. I don't think we can do anything about it today based on our published agenda discussion. But that's one of the things. The other thing I'd like to look at is, you know, we have the council privilege that one council member can put something on the agenda. And I think as long as we have that, if they do that, can we put placed by council member so-and-so? Because I know I get calls like, when did council vote on this? When did a committee discuss this? Well, we haven't, but a committee, you know, a council member chose to put it on there before it went to committee or whatever. Just put their name by it, placed by this council member, so that, you know, it's their thing and it shows it's not from a committee. Council may not have even heard of it. You know, somebody could put on there, I saw a UFO this weekend. What do we do about UFOs? You know, and stick it on there. Yes, ma'am.
I thought that we changed our ordinance so that now council members are required to go through committee first, or at least ask the committee chair. And if the chair declines, then they have the privilege of putting it on the council.
So you do
technically have to go to committee first. And if it's, but if I came to you and said, let's put on, I saw a UFO right. on the agenda, and you declined,
right.
then I would be able to put that on full council agenda.
Right.
So I think there is still a mechanism by which it goes through committee, but it's up to the chair of that committee.
Yeah, I'm talking about when the council member chooses not to wait for the committee to take it up, puts it on the full council agenda, and the public says, well, here's something and council might be voting on. We've never heard of it before. Well, guess what? Council might have never heard of it before either. Mm-hmm. So that's something I'd like to consider. But this is all discussion. We can take this, maybe talk about it at a future date about what can go on there. And I want to reiterate, we do put out more information than any government agency that I know of, and we're just trying to figure out how we can streamline it, make it better. And I appreciate everything y'all do, and the changes, I mean, from years ago to now are very beneficial, and I appreciate that being done by staff. Yes, sir.
Just one follow-up question, Mr. DeMora. You said it's not possible to do get the presentations earlier. Why?
Many times we're just finishing, just finishing the details of the presentation prior to council. Some things may have changed, maybe new information. The applicant may have withdrawn certain portions of the request.
Okay.
And that information, I would say 90 to 95% of the information had already been presented at committee and is found in the minutes.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that.
That concludes our published agenda items. Item number 6 is adjourned. There being nothing further before this committee, we stand adjourned. Just about on time, too.